Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here on July the 4th. I hope you all are enjoying this holiday with your families and reflecting on what this day means beyond the fireworks and everybody applauding all the property white men who fought the British. I mean, it was more than that, I know. I'm just saying that. I'll remind you as we join this conversation here, the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org. Now, 50 years ago today, there was a place called Gwin Oak Amusement Park, and that Gwin Oak Amusement Park was segregated. Many people demonstrated and were arrested there. There's a whole history in this town as a focal point of ethnic segregation. Part of that focal point was the Gwin Oak Amusement Park on Gwin Oak Avenue in northwest Baltimore. And on this coming Sunday, July the 7th, it is 50 years since it became an integrated park. There's a celebration taking place there called Opening the Gates. Celebrate the Gwin Oak Amusement Park 50 years later, commemorating its 50th anniversary of the integration of Gwin Oak Amusement Park. The event will take place Sunday, as I said, July 7th, from 1 to 7 p.m. Citizens from all racial, religious backgrounds will come celebrate our community's diversity. One of the people putting that together is Rabbi Gila Ruskin, who's in the studio, spiritual leader of Temple Adas Shalom in Haverty Grace, Maryland, co-chair of Opening the Gates, celebrating Gwin Oaks Amusement Park 50 years later, and one of the event organizers. Leo Burrows is in the studio. Civil rights activist, who I've had the pleasure of being.
Amen.
Amen. Who I've known since 1960, when we were both members of the Civic Interest Group, wow, sitting in here in Baltimore together. George Arnold is with us, civil rights activist, speaker, lecturer, who, as one of our other guests said, channels Martin Luther King when he speaks, and he does. And Pete O'Neill is with us, filmmaker, event organizer as well. His film we've talked about before in the show, All the King's Horses, the story of Gwin Oak Amusement Park, and all welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
We're glad
Thank you
to be
very
here.
Much.
Good
Happy.
To see you, Mark.
Good to have you here. Good to see you again.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Honored to be here.
So let me ask, start off with Leo and then George, if we could, because both of you were there. I was there as well, but you were there more than I think. And to set the tone, what was happening in Baltimore? What was happening in Gwin Oak Park? Leo, reflect for a minute about that moment.
Well, of course, what was happening at Gwin Oak Park was happening throughout the city and state of Maryland and throughout the nation. We were in the throes of a civil rights campaign to open up places of public accommodation, focusing on justice and fairness and decency for all citizens. And, of course, as a black American, I felt it incumbent upon me, as did all of those of us in the Civic Interest Group and the Baltimore City Chapter of the Congress of Racial Equality, to fight the good fight and win that fight for justice. And so we were on the battlefield, and it continues to this day, but we were on the battlefield to ensure that we were going to be respected, as should any person of color, on an equal and equitable basis, and ultimately we won that fight. But there are many more to go. So we've just begun in reflection in terms of where Gwin Oak stood. A lot of folks went to jail, Mark, as you know. A lot of folks got arrested. And the strategy at that time was to fill the jails if necessary in order to make our point. So we were, and it was my job specifically to help train demonstrators both in song and indeed, in terms of holding mock demonstrations so that we could prepare for confrontations such as Gwin Oak Park. And we as black folks, of course, had the support of many liberal whites and Jewish people who were there arm in arm to ensure that we were treated respectfully. But it was quite a fight, and the fight still goes on.
The fight does go on. And one of the things that he was just saying that makes me reflect at that moment was that was that in the civil rights movement in Baltimore, blacks and whites were together. Many Hopkins students and others were part of these demonstrations. Democratic socialists and other groups at Hopkins were part of this. But there weren't as many, as I recall, white people involved in our sit-ins and picketing to desegregate the city as there were at Gwin Oak. Mm-hmm. There was something about Gwin Oak that compelled a larger community to try to end the segregation there. And it didn't dawn on me really to reflect on until what you just said, Leo.
You think that was because it was Baltimore County and not the city?
Maybe.
You know, I mean, I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know either. I'm not sure.
It may well be because of its location. It was over the line, and in Baltimore County, it wasn't in the city. And so the demographics of that might be reflective of the politics of it all.
And I know this is not your town then, George Arnold. What are your reflections on all this, though?
Well, growing up in northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin, we experienced some of the similar type things there. We had we didn't have a lot of overt discrimination, covert, yes. But I can recall vividly a personal type of situation. I was very active with the union at the time, the United Steelworkers, as an officer of that union, and I had applied for a position in accounting. And in my school courses, I received all A's in a 3-year period. And the controller of the company was getting ready to retire, and he said, I would like to hire you, but I don't want to set a precedent by hiring a black in the position. And he said, let me explain, at which point I said, no, thank you. Please do not attempt to explain because I'm going to leave. Which I walked out, and we organized marches and other things to help people to advance. And at one point, they thought that I was most radical. I had petitioned the city to appropriate something like $200,000 for job training for African Americans. This was out of sight. Well, what I really wanted were jobs, and we ended up with significant jobs in banks and other places for those young people, to the tune of about 50 or 60 of them, very significant. They're doing very well. They've gone on with their lives. But I had my background experience growing up being raised in Mississippi, first 2 years of school in Mississippi in a one-room building with five classes in that one room, and a potbelly stove. And it just happens that it was in Indianola, Mississippi, which had the dubious distinction of being the home of the White Citizens Council and also the home of B.B. King.
Right.
It was an interesting experience. Then we moved to Rockford, Illinois, the Great Migration. Rockford was a leading tool manufacturing center at the time.
So let me bring our other guests in here. I'm curious, especially Pete O'Neill and Rabbi Gil Ruskin. Neither one of you were there then.
No.
But I'm curious why you've taken this on. First, Gil, I mean, what's significant about this, the integration of Gwin Oak Park and celebrating it 50 years later for you, and why you're in the midst of this? Other than the fact it's a historic moment.
So I was reading Gil Sandler's book, Glimpses of Jewish Baltimore, and there's a chapter in there about Gwin Oak Park and this whole protest and everything that went on there. And I was so intrigued by it that I decided to teach a lunch and learn session at the temple where I work in Habit of Grace. And I advertised it. You know, I got more people to come to that session than I've ever had. There's something that just touched people, anybody who grew up in Baltimore. So they live in Habit of Grace now, but they, you know, grew up in Baltimore. So then I went to the Board of Rabbis, and I said, you know, there were rabbis at the forefront of this, of the protests and the whole desegregation in Baltimore and involved in the sit-ins, et cetera. We should honor their memory. So for me, it was saying it's the 50th anniversary. I want to honor my predecessors, the rabbis who were so involved, and then maybe invite the African-American community and have a prayer service together. That was the beginning. But then Gil reintroduced me to Pete because it turns out we'd known each other before. And the rest is history. You know, we've been working together on this, working with Pete and Bev and Bev had this terrific idea that we should celebrate right at the park on the day and create a joyful, celebratory atmosphere. There'll be a few solemn moments, but we're really there to celebrate the unity. And, of course, there could be more of that. So I've just kind of gotten caught up in this, and it gets growing every day. More and more people are contacting us with their stories. People are flying in from all over the country who were there in 1963. We're going to have incredible entertainment, storytelling. Everyone who was there in 63 who wants to tell their story, we're going to give them a chance to do that. So that's how I got involved. And working with Pete and Bev has been an adventure, a beautiful adventure.
So for Pete O'Neill, filmmaker, why? I mean, what is it about this? Again, you weren't there. It was before you in some ways.
You and I have had a conversation. I mean, a serious conversation.
Yeah, we have.
And I know we're talking about Gwen Oak and the celebration and all. I picked up Mr. Arnold and I picked up Mr. Barrow. We rode in the car together coming over here. And just being a listener in that car of their, you know, talking back and forth between their stories, and Mr. Arnold going into the Martin Luther King that he remembers, and Mr. Burroughs, I mean, I've interviewed him for the documentary, talking about the, you know, the experiences, and just listening. And I'm 55 years old, and no, I wasn't at Gwen Oak Park, but what I'm seeing is that it's so much of the history I don't know. When I had a chance to interview you, and this is how serious this subject is, mm-hmm. when I interviewed you, I did not know that Mark Steiner was involved with Gwen Oak Park and desegregating the park for me. To give you an idea how serious this is, and it's not just being here at Morgan and talking on the radio show, and I appreciate it more than anything. I have been, as a news photographer in the last couple of weeks, on these shootings of all these people dying.
Mm. Mm.
And a lot of them are young. And I was on the shooting in Cherry Hill of the one-year-old killed.
Oh, yeah.
We, as African Americans, don't know our history. It's being lost. At 55, if I didn't know Mark Steiner was out at Gwen Oak Park protesting for me to have a right to get into the Double T Diner and restaurants here in Baltimore, let alone an amusement park, these kids don't know this story. So, yeah, me and Beverly did a documentary. And I just, you know, it's so serious for me to be in a room with the three of you, because Rabbi Ruskin didn't go through it, and tell people how important it is for a white man, two black men sitting across from me, who fought for me to have a right for this. If this station, if Morgan's radio station and this show doesn't do anything more than what it needs to do right now, that story needs to be told.
And think about that, Leo. I do want you to jump back in here because I reflect on this a lot, and I know you do as well, as a caller to the show a lot. I need to have you on as a guest on the show more than a caller because you have too much to say. Mm-hmm. But just reflecting, because when we look 50 years ahead of that moment, to the place we are in now, the idea of an interracial, integrated movement for real social change in America doesn't exist, really. I mean, it exists here and there, but it doesn't have the kind of power it had.
Yeah. I'm proud of my having been anointed by God to participate at that point in time, and I've continued to this day to be an activist. But this notion that we're in post-racial America is kind of, really, it gives me schizoids. You know, I mean, I don't know what post-racial America means. Sometimes it's cyclical. You know, you think you're progressing and you go in a circle, and obviously all white people are not racist. But that begs the question of institutional racism, which is alive and well. I'm going to be telling the story at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday the 7th. I'm in the storytelling, and I've been given a half-hour slot.
Uh-oh.
From 2 o'clock.
I know you can fill it.
From 2 o'clock from 2 o'clock to 2:30, I'm going to be singing freedom songs and telling a story. But I just want you to know that it's interesting that in 1963, not only were we at Gwen Oak, but you'll recall, Mark, and the rest of you, that in 1963, we were at loggerheads with the House of Correction and the Maryland penal system because the prisons in the state of Maryland were segregated. And William C. Curran was the commissioner of the Department of Corrections. And, of course, he's related to Martin O'Malley's wife. And I don't know how he was related, but I know it's a Curran family.
Right.
And he was heading up the House of Correction. And when we went to G-Wing, G for great, G-Wing at the House of Corrections in Jessup's, Maryland, they had 75, 80 black inmates with one shower there. And the inmates told us, said, look, make them take you upstairs, make them take you downstairs. And they were still utilizing the farm system at that time at Jessup's, where the black inmates were on the farm, many of them, and the white inmates and some house Negroes were working for the warden. So I'm just saying a lot was happening in 63, including, as you know, the March on Washington, which I helped as civic interest group and core coordinator for that March on Washington with Clarence Logan as chair of the civic interest group and Walter P. Carter, the president of the Baltimore City chapter of the Congress for Racial Equality. I worked with both of them in the capacity of public relations director for both organizations. So I'm saying 1963 was very pivotal, but again, we've only just begun. I just want to say that to transform this nation into an oasis for justice. Anybody who thinks we've arrived, they're asleep. We've got to fight now harder than ever, particularly in light of the Supreme Court decisions to disenfranchise voters in this country.
Once again.
Unbelievable.
To roll back the clock.
I know.
They don't want you to vote if you're black and poor. They still got a game for you. So we've got to fight harder. Let me stop because I get caught up.
That's all right, Lou.
Other folks got to talk.
Can I just say one thing? I've been so moved by how many people were at Gwin Oak Amusement Park and involved in the protests and have gone on to be social activists, including you, Mark. But so many people have said that was the beginning for me. That was the beginning for Michael Schwerner. That was the first protest.
He was there.
That was the first. He had his awakening there.
And for people who don't know what we're talking about, Michael Schwerner, along with Cheney and Goodman, were murdered in Mississippi in 1964. They were the free civil rights workers. We're talking about Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman. Schwerner was at picketing at Gwin Oak.
Right. So he, Danny Schechter, who's a journalist and who's right now with Mandela in South Africa, that was the first protest he ever went to. So he got his start that way. Rabbi Waskow, who we mentioned, who's been involved as a social activist, social justice activist, every moment of his life since that day at Gwin Oak. So it really impacted the lives, that event, even though I wasn't there. I met so many people now whose lives were impacted, who were inspired to carry on with this mission by being there for those few days of protest.
I mean, not to interrupt you, but that's what I'm trying to show. You know, it's not just the event, you know, because I covered the story of the African-American walking through Pikesville, and I don't know all the names, and, you know, it became an issue when the Jewish patrol, whatever.
Are you talking about recently?
Wordersheim. Shomrim and the Wordersheim.
So that had the potential of becoming a negative issue. But no one knew or knows or remembers how Jewish American helped in the civil rights movement. So the documentary was part of like, oh, let me tell you this. Let me show this. Let me show you how. I know we see this on the news for that week or that month or whatever that story was, but Jewish Americans got spit upon, got beaten, got killed in the civil rights movement. So the road turned towards that. It's so important to me when you're standing at a crime scene and you see the final thing of somebody who's dead. And you hear in the last 2 weeks, 40, 50 people shot and 20-some people. And it's not just a news story. You're there covering it. You know, and so when we talk to your audience, when we're on the radio, when we hit Morgan, when we're talking about a documentary that's so final that these kids need to know the story of the struggles that so many people went through, you know, and so many people still going through, for them to have the right just to walk into a bathroom, drink at a water fountain, eat at a restaurant, and then stand side by side for someone who doesn't look like them and have the respect for them that we are not seeing right now. That's why this is so important for me to get out there.
And George Arnold hit it when he said African heritage and culture. You know, we kind of pulled our punches, some of us, after the 60s and 70s, in terms of teaching enough African heritage and culture, particularly to black folk, not just to white folk. And consequently, if you don't know your heritage and culture, you don't know your future. You can't chart a future if you don't love and embrace your heritage and culture.
That's right.
So we're talking about group self-hatred and how that plays into why some blacks don't love their heritage and culture because they've been programmed. And I don't want to put – I'm not putting it all on white folks, don't I say that. But some of us have been programmed like computers to
believe that we're not so important in terms of heritage and culture. Yes, we are. The country was built off the backs of slaves, free labor in this country. That's why we're in the ascendancy. That's why we're the great country we are today, because they didn't pay us a damn thing. You know, right. They beat the hell out of us and enslaved us, and we had to, you know, so we got to get back to nurturing black heritage and culture and making that part of American history in a preeminent context.
No question. Right. Absolutely, completely. And I think that if I always say black history is American history. And if you're an American, you are black. I make people think about that if you're not black. But before we have to go, we only have a few minutes left here. George Arnold, just for a minute, just to kind of give us your thoughts as a man who was not here 50 years ago, but has been actively involved in life and civil rights work. I know you'll be there on Sunday.
Yes. Absolutely. I'll be there on wheels. When I was contacted by Pete, I readily accepted because when we talked about justice, Dr. King made it very clear that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, because we're all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality tied in a single garment of destiny. And whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. So, yes, I'll be there and make my contribution. I arrived here in 1982 as a personnel manager at the Bendix Corporation in Townsend. And it's documented that during 83, close to a little over 1,000 people were hired. Out of those individuals, approximately 80% were from the inner city of Baltimore, 43% were minorities, and approximately 51% were females.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no fear of my job. Affirmative action plans that we would do certain things, and I made sure it was implemented. And we had the support from the top down. And I gained a good working relationship with people in the city. And one thing Dr. King said, many things, but he said, you know, figuratively speaking, everybody from a base black to a treble white is the same on God's keyboard. He just wants good music.
I love that.
So, first of all, I want to thank all of you for being in the studio here today.
Amen.
It's good to have you all here. I want to leave you with some words of Langston Hughes and tell you about Sunday.
Okay.
One of my favorite poems is Let America Be America Again. Mm-hmm. Couple of stanzas. Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain, seeking a home where he himself is free. I say it plain, America never was America to me. And yet, I swear this oath, America will be.
Amen.
Wow, that's beautiful.
That's great.
So it's good to have you all in the studio here.
4th of July, that's
one
perfect.
Of my favorite poems of all time in those lines. Rabbi Yehiel Ruskin, spiritual leader of Temple Adar Shalom, who is organizing this celebration in Gwin Oak Amusement Park 50 years later, as well as Peter O'Neill, the filmmaker who made All the King's Horses, the story of Gwin Oak Amusement Park, who is another event organizer. Leo Burrows, who was there on the front line, has been his whole life, civil rights activist, who's a pleasure of saying I've known since 1960. George Arnold, civil rights activist, speaker and lecturer, who embodies Martin Luther King. Join us all this Sunday, July the 7th, from 1 to 7 p.m. at Gwin Oak Park and Gwin Oak Avenue. Just make that left in Liberty Heights if you're coming from the south. Got that right?
Yeah,
if you're coming from the north, make that right. Just come on down to Gwin Oak Park, right by Woodlawn, and join us there to commemorate this 50th anniversary. I want to thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much.
Glad to be here, Mark.
We'll see you Sunday.
See you Sunday.
And everyone else.
And everyone else.
Okay. Yes, indeed.
It's going to be great.
Remember,
We shall not be moved. Just like the tree that's planted by the waters. We shall not be moved.
Even in Baltimore.
We shall not be moved. Even in Baltimore, we shall not be moved.
Just like a tree
that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved.
There you go.
We're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to hear an interview I did with the late Howard Zinn, who wrote The People's History of the United States. one of our most active and incredible historians in America.